You are listening to The Weekend Chapter on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Thank you so much for joining us right here on Adventist World Radio, powered by the SID Media. It is to The Weekend Chapter, and right now we're getting straight into our interview for the day, and we do have the man, Dr. Charles Schleser. Yes, he is our doctor, and he has been running a series simply titled Healthy Living Made Easy. So many health gems that he has managed to share so far on the series, and today he's back with yet another very, very interesting topic that is affecting almost all of us. So without preempting this particular topic, let me start by welcoming the man to the show. Dr. Schleser, thank you so much for doing this with us and for being here on This Weekend Chapter.
Thank you for the invitation. Glad to be here and to have an interesting discussion that's going to transform individuals and communities.
Wow, amazing, amazing. So, Doc, let me just get straight into it. And first of all, when you're talking about this subject of substance abuse, you find that many people think of failure or weakness, you know. So you being a lifestyle medicine specialist, give us a perspective from your point of view, from your specialty. How should we actually understand, first of all, the issue of addiction?
Okay, yeah. So addiction, we should see it not simply as a moral failure or a lack of willpower, but it's actually a complex biopsychosocial condition involving the brain, behavior, environment, stress and trauma, and coping patterns. So many people use substances not because they are weak, but because they are trying to manage pain, loneliness, anxiety, or unresolved wounds. So from a lifestyle medicine perspective, we ask, what pain is driving the behavior, and how do we heal the whole person? Like, for example, someone maybe who is going through a divorce and they're at a point where they think that they are lonely and they think they cannot cope with life, and they begin to drown the pain that they're going through the use of alcohol, simply because the psychological pain manifests itself in physical actions. So in this case, when we ask where is the pain coming from, it's coming from an impending divorce. So we help this person to realize that though they are about to divorce, in as much as they feel lonely, they are not alone because Christ is ever present. They can tap into the power of Christ. And some people then begin to feel like, you know, nobody loves me because of this particular person that they put probably a lot of hope as far as love and life is concerned. And then we begin to help them to realize the natural essence. Just because one person at this point seems not to love them, it does not mean that everybody else does not love them. So then this lessens the pain that the person is going through. It helps this person to be able to see their circumstance and prevailing condition from a different angle altogether.
Interesting, interesting, Doc. So, of course, you did talk about people having a lot of pain, and that's the reason why there's a lot of substance abuse. And I don't know, is it just pain? What else is causing this thing in our communities, especially among young people? How come it's now dominant? What are some of the reasons that are lying behind this behavior?
Okay. Yeah, so some of the reasons there's a rise as far as distress is concerned and lack of stress coping mechanisms. Generally, given the world over, including our own country, Zimbabwe, and the rest of Africa, there's a high rate of unemployment. And many people have got degrees that they are sitting with in their homes, and some lack entrepreneurial skills to. What can I do outside of the degree that I went to school for as far as my profession is concerned? Family breakdown also contributes to this. Identity confusion. Some people grow up in the church and when they're then out there, when they begin to meet the rest of the open world, they begin to have an identity confusion, and some end up into drinking, which is not what the lifestyle they used to be. Peer pressure also contributes. Social media influence. There are some people that promote these drugs, alcohol, tobacco, multiple concurrent sexual partners, which is a sexual addiction. It's something that is good and amenable, when in actual essence, some of them in their lives, they're not even doing that. It's just acting. And some people get caught up in this. And then easy access to substances. In the past, I remember when I was growing up, I was not allowed to go into a bar. I would not be allowed to go into a space where they are selling tobacco and alcohol. I remember even in a supermarket, you have to show your identity that you are 18 years and above to be able to buy this. So these days, there's a slackening of those standards and declining emotional resistance. So young people today often face adult pressures without enough guidance, purpose, or coping skills. When pain rises and support falls, substance use increases.
When pain rises and support falls, substance abuse increases. Now that's something else. That's a profound statement. And since you're talking about support, it sure points to the fact that the environment one is in also plays a part in one being pushed towards or being driven away from this thing of drug and substance abuse. So how important is the environment that we create for one, especially our young people?
Yeah, so the environment is very, very important, because a human being takes into their life, takes into their mind, into their body, what surrounds them, the environment that surrounds them. So if the environment is easy access, has got easy access to substance of abuse, if there's advertisement on the national television, or if there's advertisement of substance of abuse in billboards and everywhere, inviting young people to partake of these substances, this is going to affect their mind. For we learn from the Bible that by beholding, we become changed into that which we behold. So if the environment is promoting and encouraging substance use, and these young people have not yet developed the right backbone and the right mental resilience to be able to withstand temptation, they are bound to give in. And if the environment also does not have enough enough systems and enough a space to allow young people to be active, and not giving young people the right tools for them to realize that one can be busy and active in their garden, producing food which they can sell, the environment is not fostering that. It's going to lead young people to be idle. And of course, we learn that an idle mind is the devil's workshop. So the devil then also brings in suggestions to these young people to do certain things. And we find even sometimes the environment that we find sometimes in the food outlets, where now we have got companies that produce sweets, that produce food that looks like cigarettes. And they're producing also some alcoholic beverages that are mimicked in bottles that look like beverage bottles that people usually would drink, thinking that maybe it's just a soft drink. So all this environment affects the young mind that is being bombarded with all these invitations into those spaces. And if you also realize that in the past, we could not have in a community closer to where people are staying, maybe say just next door there's a bar, next door there's a place where there's ease of access of tobacco, of alcohol. There were designated places that where only these substances would be sold, maybe at our shopping malls and areas. But now we have seen an increase of within the communities, sprouting of small shops next door, tuck shops, etc. So there's now an environment that fosters accessibility of these beverages, and the price sometimes also for the average person who might not even be going to work, that's got a little bit to spend, seems to be affordable. So all these challenges, these environmental challenges, affect the young people to get to a point where they end up getting these substances. We can also talk about
secondhand smoking. That's another environmental factor that affects young people, even adults, to make the wrong decisions sometimes, because when there's people that are smoking in public, other than in designated places where they can smoke, maybe in private or in smoking places, if they're smoking like in a public transport, in public spaces, it exposes those that are not smoking to the substances that are found in the tobacco, that then causes one to have a craving when they probably would not have thought about doing it. And they may find themselves being lured to places where this smoke is available because they had exposure to it. And in actual essence, those who have got secondhand exposure to tobacco are at a higher risk as far as challenges that can arise as a result of smoking tobacco. And as such, it would be very good if people then begin to realize that the law and law enforcers can do so much to a certain extent as far as these behavioral models are concerned. But you as an individual, you also have got a choice to move away from such environments. Because sometimes when you engage with these people that are second, that are smoking in public, sometimes they can be arrogant, sometimes they can be adamant and stubborn and not want to consider other people. So sometimes it's better to be proactive and avoid such places or move away from such places so as to protect oneself and reduce the risk of having the craving and probably end up taking that substance or a stronger substance.
Mm. Very unfortunate that secondhand smoking is very much part of us. I remember someone saying, it seems like no matter where you're standing or which direction the wind is going, somewhere, somehow, if somebody is smoking close to you, the smoke finds its way straight to your face. And I don't know how it happens. But anyway, as we're still on this talk, if there's one thing that is very, very disheartening, would be to find out that someone you know or someone who's close to you is already knee deep in this whole drug and substance abuse issue, and they are addicted to some substance of some sort. I guess if there's one thing that we all want to know is what are some of the warning signs, the early warning signs to spot if someone is, you know, engaging in these things.
Okay, so when we are looking at warning signs, I just want to upfront say that these warning signs do not indicate that one is actually taking any substance. It's just indicative, and sometimes one can probe in the right way so that what I'm going to share, the moment you begin to see something like that, you say, ah, this person is into this habit. So some of the warning signs include sudden behavior change, which can be probably isolation or secrecy. So when I was growing up, maybe just as a side note here, when I was still in my primary, early primary around grade 2, grade 3, in our local place where we grew up, it was common for young people like that age of mine, that young person, to be smoking. And but we would do it in private, because at the end of the day, there were some people that would shun that particular habit. So the moment we begin to isolate ourselves and begin to be more secretive with my friends, that was an indicator to my parents that there's something that is happening here. And of course, it took me some time to come out of that particular habit. And then declining school or work performance is another warning sign where one just realized that, you know, this used to be an A-class student. Now they seem like to be a D or maybe an E student as far as marks are concerned. Work performance, when one is used to having certain physical energy and ability to do work, and now there's just decline as far as work performance is concerned, people can begin to probe into that in a kind way. mood swings or irritability, new risky friends. So there is, in certain communities, people that are known to consume tobacco and alcohol, that are known to be some, in quotation marks, some call them rascals, if you want to put it that way. So if one begins to hang around with those particular kind of people, that can be an indicator, because there's ease of access to know where the substance is gotten. Missing money or valuables, because eventually one begins to steal money or start to sell certain things from the house or from work or from school to buy these substances. Sleep changes, when one maybe during the daytime is just sleepy, and probably they're not having adequate sleep at night, because sometimes these different substances can actually keep someone alert and awake when they're supposed to be resting. Loss of motivation, poor hygiene, frequent lies or excuses. So when it comes to poor hygiene, you'll find that where some of these hard drugs are sold, because it's illegal to sell these hard drugs to anyone, you'll find that some people in one of the food trips that we had, they take these drugs and put them by the rubbish pits or by the where rubbish is being collected, but in a certain particular packet that one can identify, so they can go give money to someone who's standing by the corner. When they've given the money, then they go to this rubbish and pick up something there, just like any paper. So because that's the environment they're identifying with, something they think is going to help them, their environment as far as their bedroom also begins to have poor hygiene. They themselves also begin to identify with that which they're identifying with as something that can give them hope, or that can give that can take away their pain, which in actual essence is not. So these are some of the warning signs, which if you can pick one or two of them, begin to probe. And if you realize that you don't have the right techniques to probe, maybe engage a social worker, a community worker that can reach out in the right way. Because the moment we fail to reach out in the right way, people begin to shut out and close themselves out, and even begin to avoid us when they realize that we have picked something that is actually pointing out to a form of addiction.
Now that's it right there. Imagine your loved one is now busy, associated with trash and things like that. Come on. But nonetheless, it is here and it is a part of us, and we just have to do something about it. And you being a lifestyle medicine specialist, talk, I guess, lifestyle medicine is mainly known for dealing with the root cause of something. So if you're dealing with someone in this predicament, how exactly do you implement your lifestyle medicine specialty?
Okay, in summary, lifestyle medicine has got some pillars that it works with. And the first pillar is nutrition. So when one is taking different types of substances, there's usually going to be some malnutrition, or there's usually going to be some form of nutrients that are not available for the body because of lack of appetite when one is just taking that particular substance. So there is need to cover the gap of nutrition so that one is with the right nutrients that assist even the nervous system, such as the B complexes that we find in wholesome foods that can help to ease the irritability, the nerves that seem to be at the end. Also physical activity for mood regulation. We usually encourage people when they begin to have the craving to go for a walk, to go for a run, and then come back probably and go into a cold shower, to sing in the cold shower. All these can actually assist one to be able by and by to overcome cravings and be in charge. Restorative sleep. So because some are not sleeping, their decision-making, their thinking process has been hijacked and they cannot think properly. So then we help them with the restorative sleep. This can be done through different types of teas or different types of approaches to help them to sleep better. It can even be talk therapy that can help them into that. Better stress management, coping skills. What can one do? Maybe one can go for a walk, do some deep breathing, maybe start working on something, even as simple as maybe making a car out of wire, what usually the young people would used to do as children, even when one is in their adulthood. Maybe give them some beads to play with. that can help with stress management, healthy relationships. So many people, what they desire is to be loved and to love as well. And we find that in most cases, people who then end up taking substances because they lack the love and the support that they need. So then we offer that as well. Purpose and meaning in life, emotional healing, positive daily routines. As simple as waking up in the morning, having an affirmation statement to say, I can stop marijuana through Jesus Christ who gives me strength. And someone writes that statement in the morning. And at evening, they say, I have managed to stop to take marijuana through Christ who gives me strength. That's amazing. And the following day, they can even put a statement, I am loved, I am important. So these positive daily routines, affirmation statements are very important, and they can help someone to appreciate themselves and increase self-care. That can then help them to realize that what they are doing is something they need to avoid and stop. Then prevention of relapse triggers. If one knows for sure that I am triggered to take maybe cocaine by being in a place where there are women that are indecently dressed, like maybe in a bar, or I am triggered to take maybe a hard drug like marijuana because I've taken alcohol, then it's best to avoid such places. It's best to avoid such triggers so that one is not does not find themselves getting back into relapse.
Mm. Okay, so these are very practical ways in which you're saying lifestyle medicine tackles this scourge, should we say, of drug abuse. But then, in other words, are you saying that it is possible for one to be treated without having to go, let's say, for rehab?
Okay, so rehabilitation is very important. And I can say for the greater percentage of people that have got this particular condition and challenge of any form of substance abuse, they will need rehabilitation. Then there's a smaller percentage who can, through maybe the church, can, through the community, through one-on-one, can change their behavior through talk therapy, through Bible study. We have actually seen people that at the point of baptism, when they come out of the water, behold, they've become a new person. And everything, the previous life is a thing of the past. There is a possibility. But that is for a small group of people. But for the greater percentage, there is need of rehabilitation so that one does not get to a point where they may end up dying, because when they try to overcome this habit solo by themselves without professional help, these toxins may actually end up overcoming the human body because of not knowing how best to detoxify, how best to deal with withdrawal symptoms, and how best maybe to tailor down whatever substance one is taking, because some of these substances are really hard substances that needs rehabilitation. And some people sometimes are not honest enough to say what all they're taking. So they may just mention just one or two things, but in actual essence, there is another hard drug that they are actually using. So I could say a smaller percentage can overcome substance use challenges without the need of professional assistance as far as rehabilitation is concerned. But the greater percentage, as we are seeing now, there will be a need for rehabilitation.
So I guess the issue, Doc, is there's some people who are also too far gone in this addiction for drugs and substances. So being a professional, what would you want to say for someone who feels like, I think my situation is a bit too serious, you know, for me to even start thinking about food and nutrition and things? Maybe I'm just too far gone. Is there redemption for me?
Okay. For such an individual, I would say, as long as one is breathing, whether they are walking or they are lying in their bed, as long as they are breathing, there is hope for such. There is no hopeless case. Every case have got hope. The moment that the sun arises in the morning, there is hope. And it's going to set at the end of the day, there is hope. And in between these 8 hours of hope, with 60 minutes in each hour of hope, with 60 seconds of hope in every minute. So at the end of the day, there is no hopeless situation. There is hope for renewal of the mind. You know, when we're looking at the caterpillar experience, when you see the caterpillar, how it looks like, it doesn't look like anything to be emulable, like to be something that you can commend and look at and say, wow, this is beautiful. But that caterpillar, that Mopane worm, when it transforms itself into a cocoon and then breaks open into a butterfly, it shows that within the caterpillar itself, there was a hope that was instilled within it. So within each and every one of us, daily God instills a hope within us. When we open our eyes, when we lift our eyelids, when we just try to open our lips, that's an indication of hope.
There is hope all around, says Dr. Charles Lizarai. He's telling us about this addiction, this scourge that is killing us. You know, so many of our loved ones are being affected by this this pandemic, if I can put it that way, that has hit us, especially in our young people. So in case for families, Doc, those who have loved ones who are suffering, where can they take their loved ones?
Okay. Yeah. So as far as where they can take their loved ones to, the very first place they can take their loved ones to is to commit them to Christ Jesus. Simply because we read from the book of Romans 12, verse 2, that says, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve that God's will is his good, pleasing, and perfect will. And we also learn from John 3, verse 16, that says that, John 3, verse 16, that says that Christ came into this world and God gave up his only begotten son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. So the very first port of call is to realize that there is need of a higher power other than this particular individual, other than ourselves that can help. This actually is the first step when it comes to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. That we accepted that we ourselves cannot help ourselves. We need a higher power. When we recognize that, then we can look for places where we can go to, such as the National Rehabilitation Center that is in Rua here in Zimbabwe. The Ministry of Health and Child Care has got different places around the country, and other different countries also have got the same places. Like here in Zimbabwe, we've got the Parenatal Group of Hospitals, Inkucheni Central Hospital, Chipadze, Detoxification and Rehabilitation Centers. All these are government institutions where people can go to the nearest place where they can be. There is also private places where they can go to, which are NGOs. Some of them are faith-based, such as Mandipa Hope Rehabilitation Center, Gateway Mental Health, Restore Life Rehabilitation Centers. And there are also lifestyle centers that are run by different self-diagnosed individuals or groups of people that have come together to come up with a place where people can actually find recovery. Here in Harare, we've got Ready Remedies. We also have got Balm of Hope Hospital. We have got Adventist Lifestyle Center. We have, even in South Africa, we've got Be Free Lifestyle Center. We also have got different places around Africa. If you check closest to you, there would be a place where one can find hope. And of course, you can reach out on my number, which is +263-783-809-684. +263-783-809-684. And I can give you guidance as far as which could be the best place for you to go and get assistance. If there is anything that you can do, is to pick up that phone, dial the number, and begin the journey to wholeness, the journey of hope.
Indeed, the journey to wholeness, the journey to hope, and hopefully that we'll be able to take our loved ones and maybe take our souls there if we're suffering from these different addictions that are affecting people in this generation. So, which concludes our discussion right here with our good doctor, that is Dr. Charles Klenzer. He is a lifestyle medicine specialist, and he's always here to give us gems as far as health is concerned. And of course, we are still on our Healthy Living Made Easy series, so we are still going to have Dr. Charles Klenzer in the house giving us a whole lot of health tips. So, Doc, thank you so much for doing this once more.
You're most welcome. You know, Marv, healing is a journey, not a destination. So the moment one begins that journey, they need to keep on going until they are actually completely restored.
Wow. Healing is a journey. And hopefully that the Balm of Gilead will continue to heal us and use our specialist doctors like Dr. Klenzer to do that for us. So many thanks to the good doctor. Stay with us right here on Adventist World Radio, powered by the SID Media. It is still the Weekend Chapter.
You are listening to the Weekend Chapter on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.